right? You were just some snot-nosed young kid who thought he knew everything, and look at you now. We're very different people. I would never spend $100 a week on my appearance, obviously.
Hey, Weekly Pulse on all things green and gold with the three-time Wisconsin Sports Writer of the Year, Jason Wilde, ahead of Packers-Bears coming up Sunday at Lambeau Field. First place in the NFC North is on the line after the Packers have now won three in a row, including a big win on Thanksgiving on the road at the Lions. 8-3-1 all of a sudden. Oof. It feels like the tune and the tone of our Packers conversation has flipped quite a bit in just a month, Jason. And I don't mean just specifically me and you. I mean like Packers fans overall. Coming off of that loss against the Eagles on November 10th, it felt like, oh no, the sky may be falling. The offense has gotten stale. Matt LaFleur has lost his fastball. And now they've won three in a row and have a really big one coming up Sunday against the Chicago Bears at Lambeau Field.
Yeah, no, I never felt that way. I felt they obviously had some issues that they had to fix. But I never thought that LaFleur had lost his fastball. I never thought that their offense was in deep doo-doo.
And I'm not implying you felt that way by any means. I'm just saying the tone after the Eagles' loss.
I understand. And
it was a popular opinion, if you will.
Yeah, and we've talked about this a bunch, like, this is why I try to do the job the way I do the job. Like, look, let's be honest. Things could have spiraled.
Yeah.
They could have. It's not out of the realm of possibility. But they got too much talent, and their coach is too good of a coach. And, you know, people asking if you're coaching for your job. And, I mean, you know, look, I got a ton of respect for the guys that cover the team. I personally thought that was premature. Like, they lost back-to-back games. They were 5-1-1. They had a bad loss against Carolina, which doesn't look as bad now, by the way.
That's true.
And they had a bad loss against the defending Super Bowl champs. Their offense was struggling. But, like, I was exasperated by some in the sports conversation space who didn't seem to understand that when your head coach comes out of Pittsburgh saying we would be crazy not to run the offense through Tucker Kraft, and then he loses Tucker Kraft 2.5 minutes into the second half against the Panthers, which, by the way, do we really think they lose that game if they have Kraft for the entire game? Like, I think they probably win an ugly game 20-16 or whatever it is. So I never thought the sky was falling. I acknowledged the possibility that it could fall, but I never really saw that. Especially, they have a defense that's going to keep them in every game, right? I mean, you know, they gave up 24 to Detroit. That feels like an accomplishment. Now, they lost Amon-Ra St. Brown in that game. So again, let's be fair. Is that offense different when it has their best wide receiver? Jameson Williams stepped up huge. So there were other reasons for them to be productive. But I still don't think they're going to win the Super Bowl. Like, I don't think that's an unreasonable position to hold. And I also think that they're still capable in the last five games of a couple of ugly wins and maybe a clunker that they lose. Mm-hmm. I don't think they're necessarily going to run the table and went 8 straight going into the playoffs. If they do, what a great story. What a great job by Matt LaFleur when his job was on the line, right? And so I'm super curious to see how this unfolds. But I look at the Bears, and I find myself thinking, if the Packers are who we think they are, then, and they're at home, if they played this at Soldier Field first, would I maybe have a different opinion? Maybe. But like the Bears point differential is +6 on the season.
And that was because they beat the Eagles by 9. Going into last week, it was -3 at 8-3.
And look, I am not here to degrade what they've done. They've won a bunch of close games, but a wise man, Mike Holmgren, told me when I was a young Cub reporter that when it comes to one score games, you hope to split. Just like he would say, you win all your games at home, you split on the road, you're 12-4, you're probably going to win your division. Well, here's the thing. The Bears are 6-1 in one score games. Like, if they were 4-3 or 3-4, their record is different. The Packers are in first place in the division. So credit to them for winning close games. But, like, they needed a kickoff return to beat Minnesota a couple weeks ago, right? Like, they're so this is a great opportunity for Ben Johnson and his guys to show that they're not a Travis Shamakery and that they're legit. Like, they'd be 10-3 if they won. They'd be in sole possession of first place. I just think that the Packers are a better team, and I think that that will show up on Sunday afternoon at 3:25.
Yeah, and I think that's the popular opinion. That's obviously the Vegas opinion.
Now it is.
Yes, I don't know that 3 weeks ago that's the case. I agree with you on that. But I don't know how much people were buying the Eagles even a week ago, or excuse me, the Bears a week ago, despite until their win over the Eagles. I think more people are saying, okay, maybe they're better than we thought. But still, I don't know how good they are despite looking really good on Black Friday against the reigning champs.
And
but
by the way, you and I'm not correcting you because I'm trying to do that less, especially to Tausch because it irritates him.
Oh, is that your end of year resolution?
Well, I'm just trying to make my life better. You misspoke momentarily there and said Eagles, right? Nobody's buying the Eagles. Then you corrected yourself. Here's what I think is interesting, and this is another point that I want to make about LaFleur, who, look, he's not my guy. Like, we have a great relationship. I like him as a dude. We're very different people. I would never spend $100 a week on my appearance, obviously. But I'm not here to carry his water for him. I'm not here to tell everybody how star-spangled awesome he is. I'm not here to do that. But look what's going on in Philly. And they're having some similar problems to what the Packers had in their back-to-back losses, including the one to Philly. And you saw some defensive players say, look, you know, we're trying to hold up our end of the bargain. But you never saw any public sniping, in part because the quarterback came out. And in one of those moments where I think Jordan Love has been at his best speaking publicly, said, yeah, if I was those guys, I'd be looking at us going, what are you guys doing? Which could not have been a more perfect thing to say after they lost to the Eagles. And so I do think it's important to give Matt LaFleur a little bit of credit for holding things together. I like the people in our YouTube comments and the people that text the Carbless Target text line, he's lost the team. How the hell do you know if he's lost the team or not? I don't even know if he's lost the team. Now, if I can get guys in the locker room to tell me that, then yes, but because they lost two in a row, you've decided that he's lost the team. Yeah. So it would appear Nick Sirianni has now gone through this multiple times. And oh, by the way, he won a Super Bowl.
Yeah, in between. You know, it seems like it's an every other year thing for Philly. They go to the Super Bowl and lose, and then the following year they start 10-1, lose five of their final six. Well, really six of their final seven if you include the playoff game in 2023. Nice. Last year they win the Super Bowl. Now it seems like they could be imploding again. And for Philly, it has happened before where it really fell apart. For Green Bay, it was a two-game skid, and it seems like everything's back on the rails for them. So that's credit to Matt LaFleur for not allowing this thing to fall apart where, you know, if you look at the outside noise, if you look at the fan reaction, if you look at some of the sports media reaction that we're a part of, and I'm not saying either of us are guilty of this, but I'm saying there are people that thought, oh, my God, everything's falling apart. The sky is falling. This team has lost it. Clearly, that's not the case as they head into a really big one against Chicago. Want to get to that game in a second, but do want to look back really quick. I know it's been a week, and it feels like that game was a month ago. But viewing what they did on Thanksgiving, going to Detroit, having complete control of that game throughout, it was like a 10-point game pretty much the entirety of the game, and then obviously the late field goal by Detroit made it a 7-point win for Green Bay, 31-24. I know we talked a lot about complete game, complementary football. But I think coming off of back-to-back divisional wins against Minnesota and Detroit, it feels like the Packers have finally put together maybe not perfect complete games, but their two most complete games in back-to-back weeks. Is that a fair evaluation of where things are at?
Yeah, and they won in two different ways, right?
Definitely.
Their defense dominated an overmatched young quarterback. Their special teams delivered a huge turnover that was basically the knockout blow in, what, the third quarter. Correct. Against the Vikings. They took the air out of the ball, the pre-shot clock era of the four corners of Dean Smith to run the clock. I mean, they won it that way, and then they won where they had to go for it on fourth down three times, got two touchdowns and a game-clinching completion, which, by the way, this is, again, why the NFL is A, king, and B, why it's such a crapshoot from week to week, because every game comes down to like four or five plays. You know, there's like 140 plays in a game, right? If each team runs 70 plays, and it comes down to three or four of those. And the Lions were 0-for-2 on fourth down. The Packers were 3-for-3. Like, flip-flop that or the Packers lose.
Totally.
And look, as good as their defense is, shows how good Detroit's offense is. Like, you mentioned it was a 10-point game. It would be a 10-point game, that'd be a 3-point game. Then it'd be a 10-point game, then it'd be a 3-point game. I think they, 5 out of 6 series, they traded touchdowns.
Yeah.
Like, that was a great, entertaining game.
It was a really
good
game.
I want to thank everybody at Aunt Cindy's house for helping me do my job that day.
Well, hold on. We got to unpack that. So you were watching the game with other people?
Yeah, which obviously
you don't do.
No. Again, I don't. I want to be very clear. There are days when I have FOMO of not being at games, okay? After 21 seasons of covering every game, preseason, regular season, postseason, scouting combine, NFL meetings. It was fun to have average Packers fans who'd maybe enjoyed a Coors Light or an Old Fashioned or two.
Sure.
Giving me storylines and their opinions on the team. It was like having my own little focus group. The turkey and the stuffing and the mashed potatoes were awesome. Shout out Aunt Cindy.
Shout out.
But it was a different environment to cover a game in, right? Then we listened on our drive back from Kaukauna. We listened to the press conferences with Paul, which Paul and the girls really enjoyed on Packers.com. Yeah, so my point is, I don't even remember what my point was. My point is that was a game that I think could have been a game that suddenly people are questioning this team again, right? Mm-hmm. And look, you can second just because they won, you can second guess the third down throw that Watson drops,
yeah,
before the fourth down conversion. Like, if and LaFleur said he knew he was going to go for it on fourth down, then why didn't you run the ball on third down to use up more clock, right? But my point is that that's the slim margin.
Mm-hmm.
And they are on the other side of it now. That doesn't mean they won't be on the wrong side of it on Sunday. But again, they just I feel like their offense is coming together. I think their defense in that game was obviously good enough. It certainly was dominant against J.J. McCarthy and the Pips. Like, they're in a really good spot with what they're doing. I'm curious to see how their run defense is on Sunday without Devontae Wyatt. I don't think they can afford another critical injury. I made the unpopular statement that they may actually, in a weird way, be better off with Sean Ryan at center, even though I am a huge Elgton Jenkins stan. I just think he should have been a left guard all the time. And
yeah.
Aaron Banks is starting to play better, which is encouraging. But overall, I think they're in a really good spot. I don't think they're going to win out. I don't think they're going to go to the Super Bowl, but I could see those both being possibilities.
Yeah, I agree with you on all that. So I'm glad you brought up the offensive line because that's where I wanted to go next. Anthony Belton gets his first career start, and I know you talked about that over at channel3000.com, but it seemed like the run game was the most efficient it's been this season with the interior pairing of Banks, Ryan, Belton from left to right. Again, it feels weird to call that an upgrade at center because Elgton Jenkins is an all-pro level offensive lineman, but he has struggled at center. He struggled with that transition prior to the season-ending injury. Ryan's done a good enough job through, 2.5 weeks now of that. Anthony Belton, the right guard, seemingly solid, had a couple of missed blocks, but again, it's his first start. We're not going to kill him over it, especially in a win. it seems like the run game can get its footing a little bit more than it had early on in the season with those three in the interior.
I totally agree. Your assessment is spot on. I assume you just stole that from Bulaga, but nevertheless, it's true. Like, and again, Aaron Banks is an interesting case because he's dealt with injuries. He's on a new team. You know, they paid him a king's ransom, and the way he was playing and the health or lack thereof, there was reason to wonder if he could be one and done. The way they structured that contract, they could get out from under it right away after 1 year. I don't think they'll do that. But unless they say, you know what, I think it'd be worth keeping Sean Ryan and we can find somebody else to play right guard. Like, that's all down the road. But Sean Ryan's in a contract year. Rashid Walker's in a contract year. Those still are unresolved. So the offensive line, I can't imagine Jordan Morgan won't be the starting left tackle, that they'll finally say, look, we've jerked this guy around 2 years running. We drafted him in the first round for a reason. Let's just put him at left tackle, let Rashid walk. But I do think Sean Ryan has made a case for whether it's the Packers or someone else. This guy can play center, and he's got versatility. Now, he has not been perfect either. But again, in a weird way, because I believe, like you do, that Elgton Jenkins was playing out of position, and that was the whole, like, hook that they put on their redevelopment of their offensive line. That is an error by them. Yeah. Whether you want to put that on Goody or LaFleur or both. But the bottom line is they're playing better now. And you see, I mean, look at the Bears. Look at how different the Bears are, having solidified the interior of their offensive line.
Great point by you.
So that makes a difference. And again, I'm not saying that the Bears are world beaters either, but they sure give themselves a much better chance because they can run the ball through between the tackles, and their quarterback isn't getting running for his life all the time.
Bingo. Right. Yeah. It makes you think about like a team like the Bengals, right? If they were able to keep Joe Burrow upright, how different is their season each of the last 2 years? Because they haven't invested in offensive line. And while the Packers, I guess from a monetary standpoint, haven't hugely invested, they've got several guys on rookie contracts. Zach Tom obviously signed the big extension. Aaron Banks, you called it a king's ransom. He got paid handsomely in free agency. But outside of that, you've got Walker, Ryan, and Belton all on rookie contracts. But those are guys.
But look, you have to use premium picks too.
Correct. Belton's a second round pick. Rashid and Ryan are obviously day three picks, but you talk about
Ryan was a third round pick, so he's a day two.
He was a day two.
And I mean, I know Jordan Morgan's not playing right now, but they invested a first round pick in him.
First round pick, right.
Like, and it doesn't always work out. Josh Myers was a second round pick, and he was not nearly as good as the center that went right after him, Creed Humphrey. But I'll tell you this, for $2 million, you might have been able to get by if you have Banks playing like he's playing right now, and you have Elgton playing at guard. Maybe Josh Myers becomes a much better center for pennies on the dollar.
No doubt. Yeah, so it's something worth revisiting given the early season struggles. But anyway, offensive line is an upgrade. That's good. I want to talk about the two biggest names on the Green Bay Packers for the next 10 or so minutes as we wrap up this week's edition. Let's start on the defense. Let's start with Micah Parsons. I feel like I say this to you every week. It's hard to comprehend how big of a game changer he has been for the Green Bay Packers. He has 2.5 sacks on Thanksgiving. He's up to 12.5 on the season. I don't even know where to go with this. I'm blown away by the impact he makes for a defense that was already pretty good a year ago. But he is a complete game changer, and that changes the complexity of your defense, especially when you lose a guy like Devontae Wyatt in that matchup and you lose him for the rest of the season. But you've still got a complete game wrecker on one of the ends, and that is a huge, huge, huge upgrade for Jeff Hafley's defense in year two.
So it was August 28th that they made that trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I've watched him. Domofsky was giving me a hard time for not having written my Enter Sandman story yet. Because I wanted to do it on a Sunday of a home game. Because I'm not saying that they're going to play that Metallica song on Sunday, but I'm not saying it. Like, I think if your defensive coordinator likes the idea and your players like the idea, your stadium ops guy probably should figure out a way to pay the royalties to Metallica so they can play it. But I still, after watching him, 8 of his 12 and a half sacks in the fourth quarter in overtime.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when and it was on way back on October 30th, I looked it up, that Halfley first raised the idea of him being a closer and brought up the baseball comp. And then it was a couple of Thursdays ago where he was walking off the podium, and I just said, hey, Jeff, real quick, growing up out in New Jersey, were you a Yankees fan? Was like Mariano Rivera your closer? I said, I think he was a rookie when you were like a senior in high school. And he tells this great anecdote, which I'm going to use at the top of my story on Channel 3000 about, you know, he plays in a football game to beat his high school's big rival. And then they go to game six, his dad, his brother, and him to game six of the World Series. Rivera's not the closer in 96. Wetland is. Mariano Rivera is the setup man. So it's before the Enter Sandman song becomes a thing in 99. But he's such a baseball guy that that's how his brain was working while obviously watching Micah Parsons. That's my long-winded way of saying, I still can't believe Micah Parsons is on this team.
Yeah, yeah. It's
like, how many times have we talked about Chase Claypool, Khalil Mack?
Yeah.
There was a trade for, I think they tried to get Dalvin Thompson, the defensive tackle, many years ago. I think he was with the Giants. He went to like the Vikings for a while. Like, Goody was the king of, we're going to be in every conversation. And I, while Tausch thinks that I'm too critical of him, or maybe I just look more critical because he's a Goody stan, like, I actually like that. And I like him being honest about saying, hey, this was our offer, like the Khalil Mack trade.
Mm-hmm.
The Bears gave up 2 first-round picks. Goody would only give up 1. That's mm-hmm. why they didn't get Khalil Mack at the time, right? So all those close calls, it's surreal to me that Micah Parsons not only is doing what he's doing, but that he's doing it in a Packers uniform. It's madness that he is actually a Packer, not to mention that he's playing the way that he is. So kudos to Goody. Again, they paid a king's ransom for him too, not only monetarily, but 2 first-round picks and Kenny Clark. Now, we all agree, no matter how much we all love Kenny as a guy and as a player, Goody was trying to get rid of that contract anyway. So he basically salary dumped a still good player,
yeah,
and gave up 2 first-round picks to get a guy that has tilted the field in their direction in an enormous way.
Yeah, you asked Goody on December 4th if he would make that trade 100 times over. The answer is yes. The answer is yes.
Yeah, I mean, look, and you can criticize him for Banks. You can criticize him for Nate Hobbs.
Definitely. And criticism is deserved there. But
right. But, like, he's hit, and I use this phrase when we – he hasn't talked to us during the season, by the way, which – That's not fans' problem. That's my problem. But fans should hear from their general manager.
I would have liked to hear from him, even though it was an early bye week. I would have liked to hear from him then.
Or at the trade deadline, even though they didn't do anything. But my point is that he has hit 3 grand slam walk-off home runs with Jacobs, with McKinney, and with Parsons. Those were big swings, and he hit them out of the park on all 3. But I think it's also important to say, you know, he's made some really smart draft picks. He's had some clunkers. There's no two ways about it. Like Luke Musgrave, who it was nice to see him get a catch, but he'd played 2 games his last year at Oregon State. They should not have drafted him.
Mm-hmm.
He has not been what they hoped he would be as a second round pick. But like Evan Williams.
That's the guy I was going
to. Evan Williams is a really, really good football player.
He's going to be
and
a pro bowler.
And they got him in the 4th round.
He's going to be a pro bowler this year.
He should be.
Yeah.
Both those guys could be.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, both of those safeties. You're absolutely right. But Evan Williams, I mean, that's been the draft pick that flew under the radar each of the last 2 years. He has been terrific on the back end for this defense. this year. All right, let's go to the offense quickly. Jordan Love named NFC Offensive Player of the Week for the second time this season. Throws 4 touchdown passes, no interceptions, doesn't get sacked in the Thanksgiving win over the Lions. I said this a few weeks ago, and this is not a victory lap because I don't think what I said was correct by any means. But it seems like, rude, you didn't need to make that facial expression. I said I'm kind of waiting on LaFleur to cut Love loose, and I'm not sure how much he trusts him. I think the second half of that sentence is incorrect. I think he trusts him. I just think LaFleur operates an offense and wants to operate an offense a certain way. But I will say, it seems like he has put the ball in Love's hands in critical situations, say third down or fourth down, more so than he was earlier on in the season. And Love, holy smokes, is providing in just about every one of those moments. He has been awesome each of the last several weeks and is having a terrific season overall. What do you make of the year 3 jump for number 10?
Yeah, I think trust is earned, right? I trust you most of the time.
Most of the time.
But not at first, right? You were just some snot-nosed young kid who thought he knew everything, and look at you now. No, you didn't actually act that way. But my point is that Jordan Love has deserved, really since the second half of 2023, he deserved some trust, a fair amount of trust. But, you know, the way he handled, and look, I keep harping on these because these are the two glaring mistakes, because he hasn't had that many mistakes. He's had a very good season.
Really good season.
The pick in Cleveland, which Jordan Love apologists at the time blamed on LaFleur for not running the ball. You can't have it both ways there, right? Because he trusted his quarterback not to make a big mistake instead of running the ball into the line of scrimmage, and he threw a pick.
Yeah, that was a big-time mistake.
And then the way he handled the end of overtime in Dallas, like, you can't throw that check down, you can't putz around, you got to get your guys up the line, all that, right? But he learned from that. He took those lessons. This is one of the great things about him. He, unlike other quarterbacks, although I did see the former quarterback at least taking some responsibility for where the Steelers are at, he owns that kind of stuff. Yeah, I can't make that mistake there. I respect that about him so much. It's refreshing, frankly. But he took those, and then he exhibited that, you know, the old Steno line that I used when I would be coaching, which I don't know if I have any more teams to coach anymore. Make new mistakes. Don't make the same ones. You're going to make mistakes either way. Make sure they're new ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's what he's done. And he hasn't made that many of those either. He's gotten away with a couple of balls he probably shouldn't have thrown. Other than that, Jordan Love has been really, really good. And my point is that he has earned more trust. Like, people thought that he wasn't – like, LaFleur wasn't trusting him against the Vikings. Like, and I didn't realize, because I didn't – I obviously have the game on my iPad while I'm in the press box. I didn't realize that the narrative being created by Greg Olson was how conservative they were being without the context of J.J. McCarthy sucks.
Correct.
And so – like, it wasn't that LaFleur didn't trust Jordan Love in that game. It was that he's playing with a separated shoulder. Your defense is rocking it. Their quarterback stinks. You don't need to put him in harm's way and take an unnecessary hit, which he took a couple of hits in that game where you saw him get up wincing. Like, Greg Olson is 1,000 times better than me at this job. But in that instance, he was wrong. And so my point is that I don't think LaFleur's trust was as low as some people thought it was in him, but I think it has increased because he's earned more.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And a good note that has come out while we've been recording, Jordan Love named the finalist for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. He is the Packers representative this year, which I don't think any of us are surprised by because of how good of a dude he is and all the good he does in the community, both back home in California and in Green Bay. But that was just announced within the last 20 or so minutes. So Jordan Love will be the Packers representative and finalist for the Walter Payton Man of the Year Award. All right, let's get you out of here on this. You said it at State of the Packers way back in July in our trailer at Summerfest, and it's come to fruition coming up on December 7th. You want the Packers-Bears rivalry to be reignited. You want both of these quarterbacks to succeed. You want them to be the Manning-Brady of the 2020s and 2030s. And here we are, 9-3 versus 8-3-1. The winner on Sunday will walk out of Lambeau Field with sole possession of first place in the NFC. I've always agreed with you on that. I just still, as a Packers fan, want to beat the Bears twice a year or even three times a year, which they may have the opportunity to do this season as both teams are gearing up likely for a postseason run. How excited are you for this one? It might be the most exciting regular season Packers-Bears game since 2013 when they needed to win at the end of the regular season? The Randall Cobb game?
Yep, that's exactly what I thought.
That was 12 years ago, man.
It was, indeed. Look, you're a fan.
I am.
You make no bones about that, nor should you. I am not. I am a fan of stories. I am a fan of matchups. I am a fan of interesting games that are compelling to write about. So I have no allegiance to Caleb Williams other than to say exactly what you just said. I think it would be really cool if they were both good. Now, if Packers fans, if there's a segment of the fan base, like Homer believes, that would just rather kick the crap out of them every year, twice a year. Sure, fine, okay. Two wins, great. I just think it's way more interesting, especially, this isn't like Packers-Jaguars. It's the longest running rivalry in NFL history, and it feels like never have the two, since like the golden age of, you know, in the roaring 20s, have they been good at the same time.
Right.
So, yeah, that's what I want. Because I don't care if the Packers win or lose. That's not my job. So, yeah, I want them to be – I want all the games to be like the 2013 game. Winner gets the division. And it's going to be close. And then somebody's going to have the ball at the end, and they can win the division on the final play of the game or one of the final plays of the game. Like, that's what I want. I make no apologies for that. And if they and if the Packers win 31-10 on Sunday, great. If they win 31-28 and they were down 28-24 with 2 minutes left and one timeout and Jordan Love takes them the length of the field, I don't know. Like, again, I'm not a fan. I don't know what's more enjoyable for a fan. I would think snatching victory from the jaws of the Bears' victory and your defeat would be even more fun.
Yeah, that's just me. That'd be pretty kick-ass. All right, I have 2 weeks to bully you into. Are you going to Chicago? I guess I should ask you that before I try to bully you.
It's not my decision. I have put in to do both Packers-Bears and Packers-Vikings. Obviously, there's some fiscal considerations, so I'm waiting to get the go-ahead from people that make those types of decisions.
All right, you need my people to talk to your people. We can make that happen. Jason Wilde, you catch him on Wilde and Tausch each weekday from 9 to noon, and you can catch him on Green Bay Game Day, the 1 o'clock hour on Sunday. Live from just outside of Lambeau Field ahead of Packers-Bears. Thanks, Jason.
Thank you, Strolls. Take care. Be good.
Very, very good.